Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Girl Dad Show. Today, I have Daraj here with me, and I'm very, very excited to get to know him. We've been talking about having him on the show for quite a little while, and we finally made it, given our busy schedule. So I'm super excited that he's able to spare some time to share his story with us. Daraj, do you mind giving us a little intro of who you are, what you do, and what you're working on right now?
Yes, I'm the CEO of Get Fresh Ventures. I founded this firm 8 years ago, 3 months before my firstborn. Before that, I was working in corporate. I was the head of operations for several high-growth startups, some from inception to selling to $180 million. That was during the dot-com bust. And then most recently, the last job I had before starting my firm was the head of operations, the first one at Hootsuite, where they were losing money, even though they raised more than $250 million. And I helped to re-engineer that company to be profitable and high growth during a time when everyone was spending more money than they should have. I come from an operational background. My dad was an engineer at Texas Instruments in Singapore. I came to Canada in 1990. And I had, you know, what you would call the Asian work ethic of always giving, spending 80 hours a week. But looking down the line, 3 months away from my firstborn, the greatest sense of anxiety I ever got was running out of time. And I didn't want to have that feeling when I had a kid. So I, on a Friday night at 9 p.m., my wife was 6 months pregnant at home. She messaged me, she said, when you're coming home. I looked around, I realized I didn't like what I was doing. I got a shitty email from the CEO. I responded in kind, took Monday off, and haven't had a paycheck since. Now I work with founders, helping them scale and grow their businesses where they're in control. And helping them engineer businesses that serve them versus the other way around. I work 35 hours a week, and that's a hard line that I've engineered into my life. My team knows it. My founders know it. Everyone I work with and connect with knows it. And that's so that I can allow my ADHD brain to stay quiet and be in the moment with my kids.
Oh, wow.
I learned about this late in life that I couldn't quiet my mind. And I think that was the greatest sense of anxiety for me before having kids without realizing it. But today, my goal is to help more folks who are moving out of corporate so that they can control their time, to move from self-employed to generational wealth.
Wow.
And building businesses that that scale for them on their terms, and then navigate the capital landscape in the way that's most meaningful for them.
So is your current business a consultancy? Is it a fund? What is the medium and vehicle that you're helping these founders?
We're a venture catalyst. So a consultancy is focused on professional services revenue. A fund is focused on investment and return. We're focused on both. Capital in relative terms is easier to get than most people think. The struggle is that most people don't understand capital, or the folks that dole out capital and what their jobs are and what their 9-to-5s look like. So we understand capital so much so that we know how to access it and deploy it. And because of that, we also get to participate in the upside. So we operate like a fund in terms of the upside potential, but we work with founders as deep mentors, coaches, and advisors to help them go beyond their immediate capabilities and expand their horizons. We're a combination of advisory and funding. We're the only ones, I think, that do what we do as a catalyst group.
Yeah.
Because we bring the right capital, whether that's non-dilutive debt and so on. So we get the benefit of operating like a fund, but in being able to fund companies, but we get the greater benefit of being on the side of the founder and making sure the funding is actually the right type of funding.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like a really cool hybrid. It's like a little bit of iBank, a little bit of capital fund, a little bit of consultancy, and a lot of advisory. It's brilliant. Did you dream this up while your wife was pregnant? Like, talk to me about that whole journey of coming to this genesis.
Well, I've been working with startups my whole career. My dad had the first startup of my career and introduced me to the concept of actually starting a business. Back then, you didn't call it a startup. It was just
starting a business, the
company. Yeah, starting a business, right? And it was through that process that I learned all the trials and tribulations of running a business and having a family and navigating both and constantly doing the math. every day to make sure that you could make ends meet first before you do anything else. Every expense is measured and tracked in that sense. So, when it came to going to the world of startups, that became my focus. The way I helped my dad, I started working with other founders and started to build their companies as in the operational role, starting with help desk, digging under tables, replacing desktops, to then managing data centers and scaling globally.
Cool.
And then running business operations and scale. And through that whole process, I was always attracted to founders and helping them scale. I actually ran the Next Big Thing, which was the accelerator that ran out of Hootsuite at the time. I don't know if you heard of Smart Suites, but that was born out of that cohort that I ran at
That's
Hootsuite
awesome.
back in 2016. And so I had the exposure to startups and founders. And when I left my corporate career, I asked myself, well, what the hell am I going to do in life now? And I got to replace an executive salary and try to be there for my kids. And it didn't come to me immediately, but what I focused on doing first was to give back. And we have a group called BC Tech here locally, which is an accelerator, and I rewrote their hypergrowth accelerator. So every company get funded. A few of them are over 100 million now, and this was back in
Wow.
2017.
That's great.
And I realized I had something unique that I could offer. I just had to figure out how to get it out there from the accelerator. And as the first start into self-employment, I knew that I couldn't just sell my time. I had to figure out how to get an upside, which is where the venture firm was born out of. Lots of folks wanted to give me money, but I didn't want to run a fund because I didn't want to force founders to grow faster than they needed to because of my capital motivations. I wanted to actually help founders. So it took a while for me to figure out how to establish this model, but the purpose of helping founders, much like I did with my dad, has always been there. I just had to figure out how to do it.
So cool. Yeah, I mean the biggest thing that I struggle with kind of raising a fund is that whole physics of the money incentive, right? Like needing to push and blow and grow, And I have toyed around with the idea of doing one that's more of like a hybrid with like a loan arm to it, but it sounds like you've already crafted and solved it. Like
Well, I
you have a
think
really good solution, it sounds like. You've actually already kind of figured out how to help them more thoughtfully.
If you tie equity positions and liquidity positions to transactions, raising them a fund, helping them to get to $1 million in revenue, bringing on a right partnership, everything that adds to the top line, services the bottom line, and leaves enough to cover the cost of acquisition, whether that's acquisition of capital, acquisition of customer, that's an innate cost that they're going to incur anyways. And you're the one that's enabling it, and you probably can do it for a lot cheaper.
And
So
faster. Yeah.
everyone benefits because value is exchanged.
Absolutely. But I guess my curiosity is just around like how you like created that ecosystem. So you just convinced the capital allocators to be comfortable with this kind of hybrid model of.
Well, like if you think about it, all the constructs were all already there. You just had to put it together in with the right jigsaw pieces. For example, syndicates are already around, and if you really question what a syndicate is, it's an email list, like a Kickstarter email list, right? Instead of writing a $120 check to buy this product, invest $500 or $1,000. You get 250 people. Most of us can build an email list of about 3,000 pretty easily over a year or two. And you have a 10% conversion rate at $1,000 from, professionals who are making $250,000 a year. You got a $250,000 check, and that's specific to that company, and you can educate the founder on the upside. And with AI, there's lots of ways that you can do that extrapolation and analysis where you just take all the things that are already there and you package it in a way that's meaningful, and you structure it in a way that benefits the founder, the investors, and the objective.
You have a very elegant way of explaining it, which makes it sound simpler than it is, but I have to give you a lot of credit because I've been trying to solve this problem for many years, and you are definitely very clever. You're very intelligent and very clever to have figured that out. So I appreciate your ability to articulate this so cleanly and simply, but I do know how hard it is to do what you're doing. And so very, 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 very cool to meet you and hear the story. That's awesome, man.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations on being able to pull that off. Let me ask you some more personal questions if you don't mind me switching gears a little bit.
No, not at all.
Talk to me about your mindset and what your wife said when you were expecting a kid in 3 months and then you decided to leave your W-2 corporate job to start your own, or her own thing.
I think she said it a few times. She's like, I was marrying the corporate executives, the
Yeah,
technologists,
that's right.
and then right before a kid, you're leaving your corporate job, and we just have a mortgage twice the size of what we had before. I mean, that was anxiety inducing before I even made the decision. She's been very supportive,
Yeah.
in the best way that she can. We've had two kids since. The second one came unannounced. The first one came through IVF, so we did a lot of work and then didn't even realize for 19 weeks we were pregnant.
Oh, wow.
2 years later. So, we've gone through the asteroids in terms of all the things that you could possibly worry about without having a job. And she wasn't working either. But I think constantly there's this constant faith that we will figure it out. And the key difference between the two of us was that she always believed, well, if you wanted to get a job, you can just go back and get a job. In my mind, that was never going to be an option. So I had to live every day to show her that that's never going to need to be an option.
In your mind, when you made this decision, you burned the bridge.
I burned the bridge, yes.
Yeah. And your wife was still kind of going, oh, there's a security blanket because you can always just go back to the 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So that adds a lot more pressure because you're not even talking to her about burning the bridge then at that point, right? Because you're just like,
Well, I mean, I didn't burn all the boats, right?
yeah.
One discourse does not make a brand, and I knew I could always there were opportunities that were knocking on my door, but my bridge wasn't the bridge that I burned wasn't one about going back to the corporate job. It was never going back to an 80-hour week,
Got it. Yeah. It's not that you burn the
right?
relationships, you burn that in the mind of like, hey, the lifestyle that you want to live is basically this newer kind of thing where you have a little more freedom of control of time.
Correct.
I love it.
Correct.
Okay, now I gotta go back to the question that I wanted to ask earlier. I didn't want to interrupt you. Talk to me about this 35-hour-a-week thing. So I get the ADHD thing. I think I might have a little bit. I know I'd have OCD, but I would love to know more about how you're combating it with 35 hours a week and how that calms your mind and helps you with it. And then two, I'm very, very curious as to your thought process of reorganizing your workday to fit into it. Because it's more than just hardlining hours, right? There's like processes you have to build into it. So yeah, let me know.
So everything's a system. Everything's an engine.
Yeah.
Everything has math to it, right? If you understand the construct of your math, it narrows the ways you can solve it within that math. So, for example, to ensure that I can choose how many hours I need to work, I still need to be able to make a certain amount of money. When you make money, there's two components to it. There's cash flow and equity. Equity is your long-term value you create. A cash flow is what you need to pay the bills right now. So if you very clearly understand your cash flow need, then job number one is to increase your cash flow to a point where the cash you earn per hour needs to match the number of hours you work to pay for that cash flow. So if you need say 15 grand in cash flow and you only can work 30 hours, the math is simple, right? In terms of a week. So first order of business was figuring out what is it that I needed to earn. It didn't start with 35 hours. It started with more, but then systematically going through an engineering and engineering and engineering until I got to 30. The first 2 years when I had my daughter, she was young. Taz, my wife, was home, and I started an e-com business. If you've ever been in the e-com space, it's a retail business that never closes its doors.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Every holiday, you got to plan for, you got to be available because that's when all sales happen, right? So you don't get a holiday before the holiday, you don't get a holiday during the holiday, you don't get a holiday after the
That's
holiday.
right.
So I was working probably more hours during those 2 years than I did before, but I also got to spend a lot of time with my daughter because I wasn't driving to the office or going into a traditional job, but I was still working lots of hours. I just could bring her to everywhere with me when possible. But it was when my son came, it was when my son was born. That's when I realized that I wasn't living into the objective I had set out to do. Because I had just created another job. And that's when I realized I had to figure out how to exit that business. And then redistribute my time in a way that that allowed me to work the 35 hours.
Yeah.
And
So you reverse
that's what
engineered it. Yeah.
I reverse engineered it based around the confines of what was available to me.
Yeah, I love that explanation a lot because it's kind of like forcing your brain to be more creative by putting constraints. And
Correct.
you can, like mathematically speaking, you can either lower the quality of the work that you do or increase your efficiency of work that you do in that time. You can also leverage money and time through hiring and outsourcing. There's a lot of different mechanics that it forces your brain to start finding ways to fill it in and get the same execution done. The biggest thing that I feel like that has helped me in, and when I think about things like that, is like just thinking about like problem identification skills becomes really, really important. Being able to clearly articulate what it is that you're trying to do and why, and what good looks like. And I think that that's like, as I get older and more experienced, I feel like that's really the skill that I'm really looking at. And I think that that's really the one that makes entrepreneurs grow and operations grow, is that ability to
Yeah.
like define the problem very clearly, you know?
I think you hit that on the nail. We've got 1,000 problems at any given time. It's clearly articulating what is it that we need to focus on versus the minutia. Sometimes the minutia doesn't matter when you articulate the problem from what is it that you're ultimately trying to solve. It confines the area of focus where the problems actually become easier to solve because you're not thinking about all these other things that you need to solve. In fact, they actually kind of fade away when you crystallize the problem and then what's in front of you.
Yeah, I love that. Let's switch gears one more time. So now that you have all this extra time, I'm assuming you're spending, how do you calculate how much time you spend with your kids versus yourself? Like, what are you doing with the other time?
Well, you know what? A friend of mine asked me once. It's like, hey, how come you're not doing more of this? Or why can't you spend time this weekend on this? I'm like, well, I'm going to spend time with my kids. I'm going to take them to this event, or I'm going to spend time doing this. And then they're like, well, are your kids asking for more time? Yeah. And he said, well, they're always going to ask for more time. I'm like, I have the time. Right? Like, why not? Because the reality is that this time's gonna go away. Like,
Yeah.
I'm gonna know my kids as kids for less than I'm gonna know them as adults.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm not doing it for them either. I'm actually kind of doing it for me. I'm enjoying it. Growing up in Singapore, and I'm not sure where you grew up, but it was a very different educational system. We used to go to school, go to tuition, go to this, go to that. Everyone was go, 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 go. And we had great childhoods, but my dad was working 6 days a week. Yeah, my mom worked some days. So we're always going family, grandma's house to school to tuition to then having dinner. And yes, we had great times, but my parents didn't know me as much as I would have liked to. And as you got older, they got busy, you got busy. And though you lived in the same house, you didn't really establish the same level of bonds. Like, you don't get the closeness. I can have my kids, I'm sure kids don't tell their parents everything, but I have great conversations with my kids. I tell them stories. We talk through things. We do art together. I'm clear that I have to temper my ambitions because when you know how to do things and you can do things, you can very easily go out and just do them. But you have to choose not to do them because you're going to choose to do something else. That was initially a struggle, not from the sense of not doing anything else, because I don't know if you've looked much into ADHD, but my brain is inherently lazy. I just don't want to do anything other than what I want to do. And so it wasn't that it was a matter of like, okay, it's going to be hard for me not to do the work. But I was embarrassed to tell people that I was working less because everyone you meet who's highly ambitious, especially when you're talking to other type A personalities, so who are entrepreneurs, like, oh, we're going to do this, or we're going to build this, and we're going to acquire this company, and we're going to do this, and there's so much activity. And it's like, I'm flying here, I'm flying there. And my question always is like, okay, well, but when do you see your kids? The way I answer it always when someone asks me, so what are you working on? Well, spending as much time with my kids. They're like, yeah, but everyone does that. What are you actually working on? No, seriously, I'm actually choosing to spend more time with my kids. So, and it's easier for me to say that now, but it was much harder for me to say that before.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. I freaking love it. I definitely am going through a stage in my life right now where I am kind of optimizing for work a lot more, mostly because the economic climate is so volatile right now. And it's a lot trickier to make money, and kind of going back to the calculus of like figuring in the amount that you, of cash flow you need for the time that you want to spend. But I will say it's kind of interesting kind of thought thing too, because it's interesting for the kids to see you sacrificing time to work as well, like having those conversations about how hard it is to make money and like having these money conversations. My kids are, I'm assuming they're a little older, maybe not, I don't know. My kids are 8 and 6, so.
Mine are 8 and 6.
Oh, really? We should totally have them
Yeah.
hang out. We should hang out. That'd be
Oh,
fun.
totally. Where are you located?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
But I'm originally from San Francisco Bay Area. So born and raised in Cali. And then I moved here about 5 years ago, and I did the different calculus. So very similar mindset as you, except I'm not as smart as you are. But what I did was I just lowered my cost of living. So that was my solution for the math equation. I just said, oh, okay, so you can either constrain this, you can do that, or you can do this, or you could just
Yeah.
lower the entire cost. And so that's what I did. I just lowered my cost of
And
living.
that's also part of the factor, right? Like, so, all my friends in this neighborhood are living in $4 and $5 million homes. Mine's about 2.5. By no means is it not a privileged life. But it's not at the stature of the peer group. But what that means is that my cash outlay is much lower, my obligations are much lower, and I don't have that immediate stress.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Exactly it. So that's really fascinating, man. I love that. So you're still finding that the kids are eager for more time. They want more time, versus like I think my oldest is starting to like kind of do that little transition phase where she's starting to like use like funny words like sigma and res. And like she's starting to be a little too cool for school. I used to be like my youngest still thinks I'm the coolest thing since sliced bread, right? But my oldest is starting to like I could see the shadows around the edge of the door opening for.
Oh yeah, she wants to hang out with her friends, and she wants to do, and that's par for the course, and that's necessary for her development. But I think it's more so making sure that I'm available when she needs me to be, and also that we can look forward and plan to do things together
Yeah, I love that.
as well. And it's taking an interest in what she's doing as well, and introducing her to new stuff. Like my dad, and even though he worked a lot when I was a kid, he introduced us to a lot of cool things, right? Like he used to bring home these electronic kits and teach us how to use a
Cool.
soldering iron and like
That's cool.
solder stuff together. And I remember those times vividly because he would sit there and do it with us, and it was interesting. And here's the next thing, and here's the next thing. And that's what I try to do with my kids: introduce them to new things. It might be a technology, it might be some new game or something where I can participate and do it with them, and then they get excited about it and want to do it again. And maybe they get bored of it and want to do something else, but it's just participating with them and giving them the exposure and showing them that we can do things together. And when they ask for it, that's when I know that at least I'm opening up their minds to things that interest them. And maybe it sticks with them, maybe it doesn't stick with them, but hopefully, but the privilege is that they get the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I just want to reciprocate the question, but where are you based? I think I read that you were up in Canada, right? Am I
Yeah,
mis- Okay.
Vancouver.
Vancouver,
Yes,
very
yeah.
cool. Yeah, I do like Vancouver quite a bit. My brother got married there.
Yeah,
His
it's
wife's family
beautiful
lives
here.
there. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Very cool. So the other question I have for you is, so your dad was an entrepreneur then. Did I hear that right? And he was a
Yeah, he was a reluctant entrepreneur.
What do you
Yeah. Well, when we came here in 1990, there weren't a lot of manufacturing firms that were building integrated circuits like they were in Singapore, in Vancouver. And Singapore was known for its manufacturing, outsourced manufacturing, and so on. And Texas Instruments had a big plant, and he was the head engineer on the assembly line there. They weren't doing much of that here, and he got a few jobs in technology, but didn't pay as well, and he couldn't really get any recognition for his education or his background or his skills or anything.
Oh, got it.
And the best way for him to make a middle class living was to start a business. That was the only way. So he, and I suspect strongly that he had ADHD as well. because I share a lot of the same tendencies, where it was a struggle for him to do the administrative stuff, like as an engineer trying to figure out sales, marketing, back office, finance, those kind of things. So as much as he was the entrepreneur, I suspect it wouldn't have been something he would have chosen to do if he didn't have to.
Oh wow, that is interesting. So, what did he say when you said you're going to start a business and quit your job?
I was the relatively quiet kid that just did really well in school and then dropped out of university, and it was a shock for him because, what am I doing dropping out of university
Right.
when I was getting straight A's? And I think after a while he just assumed that no matter whatever I did, I would just figure it out. And he was supportive in that sense. He knew what he's struggled with, but I think his faith in me was a lot of well was a lot stronger than my own faith in myself.
So there was a lot of belief that was championed in you, instilled in you to do this.
And it wasn't like he said, "Hey, go out and start a business." He's like, "Are you sure this is the right thing?" And I said, "I don't know, but I have to try." And he said, "Well, I'm sure you'll figure
That's
this out."
awesome. That's a great response. That's a great response from a dad. That's awesome. Talk to me about what your kids think about what you do.
My daughter asked me, she's like, recently, she's like, "Daddy, do you own your own company?" I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "So, like, you have people who work for you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, like, "Are you famous?" I go, "Well, not really. I'm not famous, but some people know me." And she's like, "So, like you're on like TV and people know you and you run your own company. Are you like a big person and a big deal?" I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm like, you can be this as well." And she's like, "That's really cool."
Oh, cool.
Right?
That's
So
awesome.
whatever she's building in her mind, I appreciate that it inspires her to believe,
Yeah.
where they've got the perspective because they know mom works. Mom works at Lululemon, and she has an
Nice.
exec job. So they know what a 9 to 5 looks like, that she has to go into the office because of RTOs and
Yeah.
return to office mandates and things. But daddy's always home and working from home. So they see the difference, and I think they appreciate both. I think they appreciate that we both work hard, and that it's clear to them when we have to work, and they're respectful of that. But I also see that they understand the differences, and they appreciate the differences. It's hard to tell how much they're truly absorbing at 6 and 8, but my hope is that they see that hard work is still necessary and that you can still do big things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you felt this or noticed it, but I'm realizing as my oldest gets older, because we have the same age kids, but you can't tell them to be good. You have to inevitably role model the behavior. Like you can't tell them what good about, you can't like you know what I mean? Like you actually have to do it yourself, which is really annoying because it's really hard to be a great human.
I mean, the part of the upbringing that I had was, now we call it overwhelm and not being emotionally regulated, and we know all of those things now, right? Back then it was like, "I'm mad, I'm going to scream," right? So and it's navigating those emotions ourselves, which has actually taught me a lot about mental health. It's the reason why I found out I had ADHD. And it's funny, right? Like the first half of your life, you're trying to figure out and dominate the world. The second part of your life, you're trying to figure out more about yourself and how you can control yourself in the world. And having to be that example for them has forced me to encounter and face all my personal challenges and actually understand a lot of these things because I'm seeing it in them when they have a tantrum, and you're starting to understand, well, if they're not being a bad kid and it's a circumstance of what they're feeling, what they're overwhelmed with, maybe they're hungry, maybe they've been holding it together all day at school and now they're just getting to the comfort of home and that's why they're having an outburst. Being the example for them is just a lot harder because you acknowledge your own shortcomings and then do something about it. You can't
Yeah.
just say, shrug it off, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry about that." And it's like, no, you can't just be sorry. You got to be better.
Yeah, you gotta work on it now. Yeah, exactly. Hey, let me ask you a couple more questions, and then I'm going to bring us home here with my rapid-fire questions that I ask every guest. But my curiosity really is around your qualification of success, because you're obviously very, very thoughtful about your process here and how you're thinking about parenting and work. Probably much more than the average person, I will say that. You've given quite a bit of thought. Do you foresee that your success criteria for success will change for you, in the near future or even in the long term?
Yeah, a friend of mine said this to me recently, and I felt that it was very profound because it kind of wraps up the version of what reality should be now and in the future. He said the real version of success is when your adult kids want to spend time with you. They want to come where you are. You give them a reason, and I'm like, okay, well, and you kind of immediately manifest that. Okay, well, I'm home and they're coming to visit. Maybe they've got kids, they're bringing it over. And he said, yeah, but then you also have this place in Whistler, or you have this place in Palm Springs, and now they're taking the kids for vacation there because it's a fun place for them to go on vacation, but it's your house, right? So what kind of wealth do you need for that? What kind of, how do you actually create an environment that they're not just coming to visit you, but you're giving them reason to always want to come in all the places that you can be? Okay, well, if that's the case, then they're not just coming over for Christmas. We're actually giving them all the reasons to be with us every time they have the opportunity to go on vacation, right? So what does that look like, and what's wealth mean in that way? And then they're not just coming there because of the location, but they actually have a strong relationship with you.
I love that, man. Because you know why? Because the second part to the question was what success looks like for you as a parent, but you've literally just smashed the two together already. It's kind of like almost like one and the same for you. You almost don't have a differentiator for your professional career and your dad career. It's like almost like you're just like, no, there's one success criteria, and it's basically being a great dad and having kids that want to be with me. Which is awesome, man. It's great. It's an awesome answer. I love it. All right, Daraj, let me shoot off some rapid fire questions. I like to have some symmetry to my show, so I like to ask the same questions to every guest. One piece of advice you'll give to other parents or soon to be parents?
It's going to be tough, but stick through it. Like anything worthwhile, if you're going to go on a train for a marathon, you're going to take care of your health, you're going to start a career, you're going to try to learn something. It's going to be challenging. There's going to be periods where you feel like you're completely failing, but that's part of the process, and it's going to be okay. You just have to keep going through the paces, take one step at a time, but make sure you know what good looks like and try to do it one day at a time.
Great. For the next question, if you can go back in time and tell yourself one thing before you had your kids, what would you tell yourself?
Don't be scared.
Nice.
I didn't have kids until I was 39, and that was for a reason. I felt I had to be at a certain place, had to be at a certain level of wealth. I had to have everything in order, had to have the career, had to have everything. And you don't actually need to have it all figured out. It's a bit easier if you do, but have faith in yourself that you will figure it out.
That's great. And then two more questions here. So, do you have a favorite book or podcast that you like to listen to or recommend to other entrepreneurs out there?
I read so much that that it's hard for me to point at any single one book or podcast. It's part of the ADHD mind. Unfortunately, I don't have
That's all
any
right.
one book or one podcast that I would point to.
That's all right. No worries. Yeah, let me bring it home with one last question. So, when you're not helping other entrepreneurs find their way and being a super dad and balancing those things so well and articulately, what do you do for fun? What's Diraj's downtime activities? What are your hobbies?
I find I have been asking myself that question. I mean, I do the stuff to take care of myself mentally and physically. I love clean spaces, so I'm constantly doing upgrades to our home in terms of optimizing it for life. Like I can't sit still with any kind of dysfunction. So I'm gardening and growing things. I'm fixing stuff. I'm building things. It's basically any kind of level of tinkering that I can start and create and build and see to fruition. And it's usually something I do with my kids. That I find is the greatest form of relaxation for me.
Wow, I love it. I love it. That sounds like something my wife wants me to do, so I love it. It is
I've
pretty
got a
good, I will
long
say.
list. I've got a long honey-do list that I keep working through.
I love it. Diraj, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to share it with me and use one of your 35 hours to talk to me about yourself and your life and your journey, man. It's been very fun and very, very insightful for me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk
Take
soon,
care.
okay? Thank you.
Okay, sounds good. Bye.